This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Hi, I'm Greg Watson, and this is Property Matters, the show where we talk all things property, buying, selling, rental, commercial, industrial, you name it. It's all up for grabs here on Property Matters. I'm just in the studio here on my lonesome today, but don't feel sorry for me. I've got a huge amount of news to get through and some really interesting stuff. A lot has been happening in the sales market recently, and so I thought I might talk about the residential sales initially. And Westpac says that fixed rates are probably going to fall further. They say the retail fixed interest rates will fall even further this year as the central bank considers aggressive cuts, according to the bank. They have changed their mind, the Westpac economists, and are now saying that their official cash rate prediction will now be that the bank will likely cut the OCR in August and November. The four big banks joins a growing chorus of lenders who are including ASB and ANZ to predict at least two more rate cuts this year. Westpac chief economist Dominic Stevens said the domestic economy has clearly slowed further than anticipated, and the slowdown will prompt the Reserve Bank of New Zealand to take drastic action. He says a lower business confidence, a recent rise in the exchange rate, and global economic woes will influence the central bank's thinking. The economist said the expected pickup in 2019 has failed to materialise. That means that the OCR potentially could drop below 1%. Westpac believes the deep rate cuts will boost house price inflation over the next year with increases of 2 to 7%. That leads on to an article that was on stuff.co.nz about interest rates as well. And they were suggesting be careful what you wish for on interest rates. The mortgage interest rates may be yet to fall a bit further, but New Zealanders are unlikely to ever pay the 1% or 2% seen in other countries. And they predict that, even though economists are predicting this drop, at the time of this recording, a typical two-year home loan special from the main banks was 3.79%. So could we get to 3%? Well, possible, but don't count on it, because the mortgage rates don't fall too much because of the size of our lending in this and the economy. So you might see home loan interest rates between 3 and 3.25% if the OCR comes down. Cameron Bagri of Bagri Economics says that where the official cash rate goes down, it does not mean the retail borrowing rates are going to follow. He says the interest rates may nudge lower, but I'm not convinced borrowing rates can fall much further. And really, as that gets, as I mentioned, the New Zealand was a smaller and seen as a riskier economy, that rate shouldn't fall too much further. Another article from Stuff saying in the Auckland area, saying that an Australian-style house price fall is unlikely in Auckland. And they say that Auckland house prices are forecast to bob around current levels. They're unlikely to melt down, according to Auckland Council's chief economist David Norman, and I would completely agree. Norman said five major Australian cities had built far more homes than their population growth required, compared with Auckland, which is underbuilt and has a shortage of around 46,000 dwellings. This balance, plus Auckland's steady economic outlook, mean a meltdown in the housing market without a sharp rise in unemployment or interest rates is unlikely. So that's good news there, and I know on the 12 months to the end of May that house prices in Auckland had been quite static. this article from Scoop under their politics section saying the housing shortage about more than just undersupply. They say the growing housing shortage crisis is more about supply and demand than it is inequity. And again, I agree with this one too. A recently released analysis by Kiwibank shows that last year's severe shortage of housing has worsened, with the shortfall growing from 100,000 homes to 130,000 homes and is set to hit 150,000 homes next year if nothing changes. Lucy Sanford-Reed, the chief executive of the Aotearoa New Zealand Association of Social Workers, says the figures are bad news for countless New Zealanders struggling with the cost of rent, many of whom who have little or no hope of ever affording a home. So that's where those figures there are pretty scary indeed. So I went on to read a little bit about, okay, and to try and figure out what are some of the solutions that we can try and find to this housing crisis. And obviously, if there's anything too easy, someone would have done something by now. But here's an article from Stuff last week. It says, could tiny apartments solve Auckland's housing crisis? Those of you who listened to last week's show will remember us talked about The Co, a building that has high-density living. This article talks about Latin America's approach to high-density living, suggesting it could provide part of the answer to the Auckland's housing crisis. This is according to an economist, unnamed in this article at this point. Latin America's biggest cities are seeing a boom in the construction of super tiny apartments made bearable by generous shared communal spaces. So some of the individually titled apartments are as small as 10 to 20 square metres. How much is that? Well, 20 square metres would be 4 metres by 5, and 10, if you supposed a rectangle, 5 by 2. So many Auckland homes have master bedrooms larger than that. However, it's the style of living that differs in these shared places. They have these little micro apartments, but they're mainly just for sleeping in while passing their leisure time in communal spaces. And so, again, this is a design where the communal spaces include shared kitchens and dining spaces, private cinemas, lounges, co-working spaces, gyms, gardens, and rooftop terraces. Even though Latin American cities are quite different from Auckland, they have some things in common, including a lack of affordable homes and populations rising so fast, people are having to change the way they live. The affordability crisis is raising questions about whether it's time for Auckland to look at overseas models of city living, even those which would require a major overhaul of the unitary plan which guides buildings in New Zealand's biggest city. So that's where it's actually the Kiwibank chief economist who had talked about the shortage growing from 100,000 to 130,000 residents. On the bright side, we've got plenty of land in New Zealand. We just need to sort out where we're going to do the developments. So this idea of co-living is already in place in Auckland, as I mentioned. There's the Co, that's spelled C-O-H, and the founder, Ben Spence, has got this new co-living accommodation in Simmons Street in Auckland, or Simon Street, that might be. And it made headlines in June for advertising rooms the size of car parks at a rate of $360 per week. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. I might keep an eye on that and watch that space for you. So here's another potential solution. This one's a bit left field, and this is from the spin-off. .co.nz. The headline being, the housing crisis could be solved by 3D printing and growing homes from seeds. What if you could grow a house from a seed or 3D print a new subdivision in a week? And this is where this article's talking about disruption. Could technology actually be the magic bullet that we need? This sounds extremely far-fetched, but they're already 3D printing houses. China is one of the areas that are doing that. And also, Joe Aitken, who is an internationally acclaimed New Zealand architect, she's talking about manipulating nature to create houses, tree houses to be precise. She thinks the not-too-distant future, scientists using genetic engineering will be able to grow houses the same way that we grow trees. Scientists we work with, that is, synthetic biologists, believe this is genuinely possible, she says. They believe you can absolutely, in the future, program the DNA and build what you want. If we want to make a tree house, we could literally program a seed before it germinates, tell it what shape we want it, size, what colour, what behaviour, and what pattern. And it's a concept loosely defined as biodesign. And it's not as weird as it sounds, because people have been experimenting within its realms as a housing solution for well over a decade. Isn't that amazing? Talking about the 3D printing, that's another solution there as well, where homes are literally printed on site and a machine is moved around a subdivision, massively increasing the building time. If you haven't seen the 3D printing of a full-sized house, it's well worth looking up on the internet and on YouTube. It's fascinating to watch. Now, the other things to do to help this, the building crisis, the housing crisis, could just be the fact that people should be encouraged to downsize as they grow older. This is a potential solution. So you end up with single people, elderly people, living in quite large houses when all they need is maybe one or two bedrooms. So that could be an education thing. It could be a way of looking at getting the people that need those size houses into those houses and working on the properties that way. Going back to the 3D printing for a minute, there's a home that was built in Italy earlier this year out of soil and agricultural waste. What that is, I'm not quite sure, but that one just took 24 hours to build at a cost of $6,000. So it is entirely possible that construction companies could use 3D printing to complete entire developments in weeks rather than years. This drastically reduces the cost. I hate to think what the equipment costs, but I guess that could be something that could be done. And in the political section on scoop.co.nz, in inverted commas, the headline, "Dear Prime Minister, Help Kiwis Own Their Home." A number of groups, the Salvation Army, Habitat for Humanity, the Housing Foundation and Community Housing Aotearoa, are urging Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern to prioritise children and our future as her ministers reset the government housing agenda. Kiwi Build was a good idea, but its delivery still left home ownership out of the reach for most people, said the Salvation Army's Campbell Roberts. New Zealanders wanted Kiwi Build to help ordinary homes, ordinary families, I should say, into a home. So now that this reset of the government's housing program is coming up, it's a chance to really address some of these extra issues and some of the ones I've been talking about today. They're talking about government-built suburbs where families still need incomes of more than $90,000 to build a home, to own a home in Auckland, and they could be risk being renting for the rest of their lives. For me, as you've heard on the show before, renting for a lifetime is something that is common in a number of other countries, but it's very much in New Zealand's psyche to own our own home. And these organisations recommend that the reset does a number of things. Firstly, to establish a national home ownership target, for example, 75% of Kiwis owning their own homes in the next 25 years. They want to continue the government-led build program just because they can handle the scale of the building requirement required. There's also finance that they could possibly do for affordable home ownership solutions. And community housing providers and state housing agencies and even the private sectors sometimes have shared equity or rent-to-buy type solutions. Another thing, of course, that this group would like is to offer shelter to all those experiencing hardship in housing. And I'm certainly a very big fan of the building of more social housing. Another thing to do is the government could support people who are renting in order to move into the housing ownership market through things like build to rent, where they rent until they've got that deposit, and then they can take over as mortgage payments. Speaking of mortgage payments, just before we go to some music, here are the most common mistakes that might cost you a mortgage. There's no doubt that upping mortgage payments by $10 or $20 or even $30 a week makes a huge difference the time it takes to repay the loan and the total interest paid. But getting a mortgage is not quite as easy as it once was, according to Stuff Business. Mortgage brokers say there are some things that would-be borrowers do that make it harder for themselves. So here's the four mistakes to avoid if you're looking for a loan. First one, bad account conduct. If the bank sees that you've regularly been going into unarranged overdraft or missing bill payments, there's a big black mark against you, and that can kill a deal dead, according to mortgage brokers. Second is carrying debt. Having a lot of consumer loans can be a problem. If you fund your lifestyle with debt, or do you live within your means? That's the question. And that's something which means that if you can get rid of your other debt before applying for a mortgage, you'll have a much better chance of that mortgage being approved. A mortgage broker says one of his clients has cleared the last of her student loan and freed up an extra $1,000 a month of income, which means she can borrow an extra $150,000. So it really adds up. Another thing that will put a black mark against your application is that people are worried about being judged or embarrassed, and so sometimes they just simply don't mention things. But if you fail to mention things, it reduces the bank's confidence in them wanting to lend to you. So if you're omitting information or not mentioning you've got a gem visa when you have and those sorts of things, it doesn't give them full confidence. It's also worth spending the time, according to brokers, to put forward your best application possible to fix any problems that might come up and therefore make it as appealing as possible for the brokers or the bank that are looking at arranging the lending. So there we go. That's some tips for you. We're now going to listen to some John Lee Hooker, one of my personal favourite artists. And this is the song Boom Boom.
Boom, 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 boom. I'm gonna shoot you right down. At all your feet. Take you home with me. Put you in my house. Boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love to see you walk up and down the floor. When you're talking to me, that baby talk. I like it like that. When you talk like that, you knock me dead. Right on my feet. How, 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 how. Talk that talk and whisper in my ear. Tell me she love me. I love that talk, that baby talk. She knocks me dead right off my feet. How, 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 how. Yeah, yeah. Now, baby.
And we're back on Property Matters. This is Greg Watson, and that was John Lee Hooker with Boom Boom. Before the break, we're talking about some sales, residential sales matters. We're now going to change slightly and head down the road of residential renting. It's for landlords and tenants. A recent article on Stuff Business relates to some Trade Me figures that have just come out, which make for some reasonably scary reading for renters. It says that if it's felt harder to find a rental property lately, you're probably not imagining it. Trade Me says it experienced a 20% increase in the number of inquiries about rental properties year on year in June. The national median asking rent remained at a record $500 per week. Head of Trade Me Rentals, Aaron Clancy, said, "We are seeing an increasing interest for rentals, but stock simply isn't keeping up with the number of properties available for rent in June, down 7% on last year." It's quite amazing because we've noticed this as well, working in the industry, that we've got probably double the number of inquiries that we'd normally get this time of year. And it's really hard to find properties for people. It really is a struggle at the moment. Another thing in his comments were that with rising house prices, some Kiwis are staying in the rental market longer than before to save for a house deposit. And also with growing rent, some tenants are staying put rather than look for a new rental in this tighter market. Unfortunately, for anyone looking for a rental property, this is the perfect storm, Aaron Clancy says, and as a result, we're seeing record rents, increased competition for properties and less stock. Says that inquiries in Bay of Plenty were up 47% compared to the same time last year, Southland up 45%, Manawatu Wanganui up 33%, and Canterbury 32%. Even areas like Auckland, where the rent prices were flat at a median $560 per week, demand was up 21%. Mr. Clancy also said there's often a lag between the increase in demand and the rising rents, and said it was likely that rents would rise if demand continued to run ahead of supply. And so what's happened is that five regions have seen double-digit growth around rents, and four have reached new record rents. I know across the properties that I'm familiar with, there's approximately 10% increase in rents in Palmerston North over the last 12 months. Now, this means that if you were renting a property for $300, it's now about $330, or $400, about $440. And that's $30 or $40 that are coming out of the household budget. So it's pretty tough going. In other news, the law which prosecutes landlords who rent out unsuitable properties passes. Thank goodness for that. The law has been strengthened for prosecuting landlords who rent out unsuitable properties. It deals with unlawful residential properties, such as illegally converted garages or sleepouts. Auckland property management and director and friend of mine, Howard Morley, told Mike Hosking some of the garage conversions I've seen are pretty rough and not fit for human habitation. He says it's a good way of overcoming the housing shortage, but they need to be done properly. Morley says it's a major win for landlords. There was a case 3 years ago that tilted the scale in favour of the tenant, but they'll now be accountable. And it will be landlords and tenants that both benefit from the bill that clears up the liability for careless damage to rental properties, which passed its final reading in Parliament today. So the headline on Scoop says, "New laws for careless tenant damage and unlawful tenancies." Associate Minister of Housing Chris Farfoy said that this bill makes practical changes to the Residential Tenancies Act 1986 to help ensure our tenancy laws better reflect responsibility for careless damage of rental properties. These changes will provide greater certainty to landlords, minimise cost and risk, and ensure tenants have the right information when deciding if they will rent a property. The bill also deals with unlawful residential properties, as I mentioned in the previous article, around illegally converted garages or sleepouts, to make sure that the responsibilities under the Residential Tenancies Act are applied. The law for prosecuting landlords who tenant unsuitable properties is also strengthened under this bill. And finally, the bill responds to the issue of contamination by amending the Residential Tenancies Act to make it apply to contaminants more generally rather than specifically methamphetamine. It also sets out the responsibilities of the tenants and landlords in dealing with contamination. So it's just sort of cleared that area up. So the change for tenants around damage is that tenants will soon have to pay for any accidental damage they make to a rental property. Now, some of you might be thinking, actually, I thought they did have to pay for damage that they do. Well, at the moment, due to a landmark court case in which the owners of a Dunedin house which burned down were not even able to claim the insurance excess back for the damage due to a a Court of Appeal ruling. So this is to effectively address that. In that ruling, it was found that tenants were not responsible for accidental damage. That's being changed, so they will soon have to pay for accidental damage they make to rental property rather than rely on the landlord's insurance. But the amount will be capped at 4 weeks' rents, so the landlords cannot cripple them with huge bills. So it encourages owners to have insurance and tenants needing to pay in excess if they cause damage, even unintentionally. So the difference with the olden days, I guess you could say, was that they'd be responsible for the whole amount. Now they're only responsible for either the excess or the 4 weeks' rent, whichever is lower. So it's just filling in a little loophole there. But in a tenancy agreement, landlords now have to say if they're insured and for how much in the tenancy agreement, and make any insurance details available on request, and if not, they can be fined $500. So that way the tenants know what they're getting into. A gap in the law around the garages and the unconsented spaces meant that if tenants living in illegal dwellings wanted to take action, they were unable to take their landlord to the tenancy tribunal because their property was not covered under the Residential Tenancies Act. The latest law change also extends tenancy laws to all buildings intended for living in, even if they're illegal. So that brings in a lot more power to stop some of these really, really shoddy practices around what is largely unsafe and unhealthy properties. So the latest changes are part of several rounds of tenancy law reform. The first, which became under the previous government, introduced minimum standards for insulation in July. And by 2021, landlords will also have to meet minimum standards for heating and ventilation, plus some others. And the government is consulting on changes which include limiting rent rises to once a year and getting rid of no-cause tenancy terminations. In landlord parlance, that means the 90-day notices. Salvation Army said it wanted the tenancy reforms to go much further because tenants were still vulnerable. They say that our clients who are renting accommodation that is by nature unlawful and unsuitable for themselves or their families, such as garages and unsafe boarding houses, do not have choice or alternatives. They only do so because it is the only place they can access or afford. That's all we've got time for this week. This has been Property Matters. I'm Greg Watson. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.